Shabbat Shalom. Happy Sabbath to all here. I'm sure you've all seen the news this week. The mudslides and the storms we're seeing in California right now. Supposedly 28 deaths are now blamed for the storms in California. And that's including the 10 killed in La Conchita, California. I don't know if you've seen footage of that. It's just amazing what Yahweh can do to man when he rebels and refuses to listen. I was seeing some satellite footage of the tsunami as well, and they showed a resort, and then they showed the satellite picture after the tsunami, and there's nothing there. All you could see is a brown space with nothing. And the tsunami, let's give you a quick update, 157,000 deaths now, over 11 nations. More than 425,000 people still remain in refugee camps. And many are predicting a possible 100,000 more might die due to malaria from mosquito bites. And with all that, I was looking on Fox News yesterday, saw an article with the Israeli-Palestinian relationship. It's getting worse. Israeli Prime Minister said Ariel Sharon severed contacts with Palestinian leader Mohammed Abbas until he acts against militants. It went on to say a day after six Israelis were killed in an attack on the Gaza Strip crossing. You know, with all that we're seeing in today's world, I think it's time that we as Yahweh's people wake up, that we get serious about the signs of Yahshua's coming and the end-time prophecy that we find in the Word. For today's message, I want to focus specifically on the beast, the anti-Messiah, the man of sin, and his empire, illustrate and discuss not only the man of sin himself, the false prophet, but also the religious side, the religious facet, along with the financial facet of that empire. I'd like to begin with Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13, if you could turn there with me. It's a fascinating passage. Gives us a lot of insight into the man of sin. Verse 1 says, "And he stood upon the sand of the sea." I want you to remember the sea. "And I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns 10 diadems, upon his heads names of blasphemy." Now here we have the first description today of the man of sin, the anti-Messiah. And here it says that he has 7 heads and 10 horns. Now what do these emblem symbolize, the 7 heads and 10 horns? I'm going to wait for the 7 heads. We're going to look at that in just a few moments. Let's focus first on the 10 horns. Turn with me to Daniel. Daniel chapter 7. Daniel and Revelation is, in many ways, are parallel. They mirror one another. Certainly we can gain insight going to Daniel and reading Daniel's prophecy. Daniel chapter 7. And we're going to look at verse 2. "Daniel spoke and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the 4 winds of heaven broke forth upon the great sea." The great sea. Same symbolism as we saw in Revelation chapter 13. "And 4 great beasts coming up from the sea." Same symbolism as we saw in Revelation chapter 13. A beast coming up from the sea. Diverse, it says, one from another. "The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings of it were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon 2 feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it." Now what does this first beast symbolize? This first beast symbolizes the Babylonian Empire. The date for this empire was from 626 to 539 BCE. The lion here with the eagle's wings, I don't know if you've seen footage of the excavation work in Iraq, but they're rebuilding the ancient city of Babylon. And on many of these walls, you see these figures. Looks like a lion with eagle's wings, much like what's described here. That's one indication this is Babylon, besides the chronological order here of the empires. Also, it says here, I beheld till the wings of it were plucked. Many say that this is referring to Nebuchadnezzar, the humiliation that he encountered. And we can read that here in Daniel as well. Let's move on to verse 5. It says here, and behold, another beast, a second, like a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise and devour much flesh. Now, what does this second beast symbolize, represent? It represents a Persian empire. The Persians existed between 539 to 330 BCE. They were a superpower, unrivaled at their time. The bear here is more than likely a symbol of the superior status of the Persian empire. We know that the Persians were constituted two groups of people, the Medes and the Persians, but one empire. The three ribs here in verse 5 more than likely represents the three great conquests of Persia. The first one was Lydia, 546 BCE, Babylon in 539 BCE, and we all know that they conquered again the Babylonians, and when they did this, Judah and Benjamin were allowed to go free. They were freed from their bondage, 70-year bondage in Babylon. So that has significance when the Persians conquered the Babylonians. The third conquest was Egypt. That happened in 252 BCE. So all these nations here are significant. There were powerful nations at the time, but yet not able to stand to the force of the Persian Empire. So again, it was a superior empire, superpower, if you will, of its time. Look at verse 6 now. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which upon its back four wings of a bird. And the beast had also four heads. I want you to pay special attention there to the heads. And dominion was given to it. Now this third beast here represents the Grecian Empire, the Empire Greece, that existed, that empire, from 330 to 63 BCE. The leopard here, I believe, symbolizes the great speed of Alexander's conquest. You know, Alexander was an amazing man, an amazing leader. He had his problems, but he was a man of great intelligence. Regarding military strategy. He was a genius. So this is symbolizing Alexander's great conquest. The four heads here symbolizes the four divisions of his empire. Historically, we know that when Alexander died, he knew that no one man could continue with his empire. So what he did is he divided his land into four different parts. Four different nations, four different empires, if you will. And that happened in 323 BCE when he died. The divisions was Macedon and Greece went to Antipater and Cassander, Thrace and Asia Minor to Lysimachus, Syria to Seleucus I, we're probably familiar with that name, and the Palestine Holy Land area in Egypt went to Ptolemy I. So again, this was a vast empire, an empire really unrivaled for that time. Let's move on to verse 7. After this, I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast. So here we have a fourth beast, terrible and powerful and strong exceedingly. This fourth beast is described with more power, more military might, than the third three beasts before it. Goes on, it says, and it had great iron teeth that devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. 10 horns. Here's our focus. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and mouth speaking great things. So here we have a fourth beast. The 10 horns here symbolizes 10 kings. It's the same 10 horns that we find in Revelation chapter 13 with the man of sin. These 10 horns, as we'll see as we go through this message, gives their allegiance, their power, their authority to the man of sin, to the anti-Messiah, to the beast. Now this little horn, as we find in verse 8, is nonetheless no one other than the anti-Messiah. The anti-Messiah. Notice here that he speaks great things. And again, we're going to see in Revelation chapter 13 that this man speaks blasphemies against Yahweh's name, against the angelic realm, against his people. Now, some say that this fourth beast is the Roman Empire, but I believe that this is a contradiction of what we find here in Daniel, specifically Daniel chapter 8. Turn there with me if you would. I think it's important for us to understand this point. Daniel chapter 8, verse 8. Says, and the he-goat magnified himself greatly. This he-goat here is Greece. And when he was strong, the great horn was broken. Alexander the Great, 323 BCE. And instead of it, there came up 4 notable horns toward the 4 winds of heaven. That was the division of the kingdom. And out of one of them, notice that, out of one of them came forth a little horn, which became very great, toward the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land, speaking of Palestine, the Holy Land. So here we see that this little horn, the anti-Messiah, the man of sin, comes from the territory of Alexander the Great, the 4 generals. Now we know historically that Alexander never conquered northern Europe. He never conquered Rome, mainly conquered the Middle East, conquered part of Africa with Egypt, conquered Asia, but never the Middle East, or never Northern Europe with Rome. Drop down to verse 22, chapter 8, verse 22. And as for that which was broken, speaking of Alexander, in the place of 4 stood up, 4 kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not with his power. So here we see for sure that the meaning, the implication, the symbolism behind the 7 heads is 4 kingdoms, 4 distinct nations. Here it says also that these 4 kingdoms that stood up after the death of Alexander never acquired the same power. It's amazing historically, the 4 generals, when Greece was divided, it never acquired that same power that Alexander had. And Alexander knew that, I believe, and for that reason he divided his kingdom, because he knew that no one man besides him could keep that land, could keep that empire, that nation together. Drop down to look at verse 23 now. In the latter time of their kingdom, now notice that in the latter time of their kingdom, still speaking about the same territory, Alexander's territory, when the transgressors have come to the fool, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. This is the beast. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. We know he's going to receive it from Lucifer, the great deceiver. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and do his pleasure. And he shall destroy the mighty ones and the holy people. So we see he's going to destroy, he's going to murder the saints. And through his policy, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and in their security shall he destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princesses, but he shall be broken without a hand. And we know what Paul says. Paul says that at the coming of Yahshua, that Yahshua's manifestation, his brightness, will just annihilate the man of sin, his false prophet. Yahshua won't have to lay a hand on him. It's going to be the manifestation of his coming, Paul says. Again, a fulfillment of what we see here in Daniel. So we see again that The man of sin must come from the territory of Alexander the Great. And again, he never conquered Northern Europe, never conquered Rome, which in my opinion is a problem for those who say that this fourth beast is a Roman Empire. Because again, this is where the man of sin comes from. Turn back to Revelation chapter 13 now. Revelation chapter 13. Remember that the 10 horns represent 10 different kings. And we're going to see this as we go through this message. Revelation chapter 13, verse 2, it says, "The beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and the mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority." Notice how close here the symbolism is to what we just read in Daniel chapter 7. The speed of a leopard, the superior status of a bear, the symbol of a lion, that foreshadowed Greece, Persia, and Babylon in Daniel chapter 7 is used here to describe this man of sin, the anti-Messiah. I find that amazing, the parallel, the symbolism there from Daniel chapter 7 and Revelation chapter 13. Notice where this man receives his power. He receives it from Lucifer, the dragon, the deceiver, Hasatan, the one who stands accusing us before our Father. Verse 3, "And I saw one of his heads as though it had been struck to death, and his death stroke was healed, and the whole earth wondered after the beast." You know, for years I couldn't understand this passage. What does it mean by death stroke? What does it mean, one of his heads? But I believe now that this is referring to a kingdom that the man of sin's empire will be built on. And again, we saw in Daniel chapter 7 that the four heads in Alexander's kingdom represented four different nations, the division of Alexander's kingdom, Greece. And here we see the same terminology. One of his heads was struck. So I believe that this is referring to a kingdom. Perhaps it could be referring to a future superpower in the Middle East. After all, that is where Babylon was situated, in Iraq. Verse 4. "And they worshiped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast, and who is able to make war with him?'" This verse is significant. It shows here that the man of sin, the anti-Messiah, is a man of war. You know, many people believe that this man is a man of faith. Many people believe that the man of sin is the Pope, or will be the Pope. I don't believe that. Here it says that the man of sin is a man of war. People worship him because of his military might, not because of his religion or faith. And we see here that he has power to overcome. And again, this power is given from none other than Lucifer, the great deceiver. Verse 5. "And there was given to him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies." Where did we see that? Daniel chapter 7, given a mouth, speaking great things, it said. Here we see that those things are things of blasphemy. "And there was given him authority to continue 42 months. 42 months, that's significant. That's the time of the great tribulation, the 3.5 years, midpoint of tribulation. This is the same time, I believe, that the abomination of desolation will be put in the holy place. And this is the time, I believe, that the persecution will begin for Yahweh's people, for those in that part of the world and worldwide. "And he opened his mouth for blasphemies against Yahweh, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, even them that dwell in the heaven. And it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And there was given to him authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation." Notice what it says there. He was given authority, power, not only to overcome Yahweh's people, but it says that all the earth, all tongues, all tribes, all peoples will worship this man. They will worship this man. All nations will worship the man of sin. It's going to be a global, worldwide system. "And all that dwell on the earth shall worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb, that has been killed. If any man has an ear, let him hear. If any man is for captivity, into captivity he goes. If any man shall kill with a sword he must be killed. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. So again, the synopsis here is that the man of sin is not a man of faith necessarily, but a man of war, a man of battle, a man of military strategy, as we found and see historically with Alexander the Great. I think there are probably many similarities between Alexander and this man who will stand to oppose Yahweh and all that he stands for. Verse 11, and I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke as a dragon. Now, who or what is this second beast that we see here in verse 11? It's described with two horns like a lamb. What could this be? Perhaps it's an attempt for this man, this false prophet, to personify the Messiah's power, benevolence, or maybe both, but to personify the Messiah. Here we also see that this man spoke as a dragon. He will speak as a dragon. This refers to him speaking with Satan's authority, speaking with his power. Remember that he's going to receive his power, his might, from the same source as the man of sin, from none other again than Hasatan. This second beast is the false prophet. It's the religious advisor, you might say, to the man of sin. Look at verse 12 now with me. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his sight, and he makes the earth and them that dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose death stroke was healed. So again, we see that he receives his power from the same source, from Satan, from Hasatan, from Lucifer. Now notice the purpose for this second beast. This second beast has the purpose of deceiving the world into worshiping this man of sin. That's why he's here. That's his purpose. Now how does he do this? How does he deceive the world into worshiping this man of sin, this anti-Messiah? How is this done? Verse 13, and he does great signs that he should even make fire to come down from heaven, even upon the earth in the sight of men. Here's how he's able to deceive all the earth into worshiping the man of sin. He's able to deceive by his great signs and wonders. Can you imagine a man being able to rain fire down from heaven? Recently, a grilled cheese sandwich on eBay with the image of Mary, I believe, sold for over $2,000. Can you imagine what people will do when they see a man raining down fire from heaven? It's an amazing prophecy that we see here. We need to remember what Yahshua said. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 24. Hold your place here. We're going to come back. Matthew chapter 24. And we're going to look at verse 24. For there shall arise false messiahs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. Here's how deceptive the end time will be. If possible, even deceive the very elect. Do we understand the deception that will happen at this time? Behold, I have told you beforehand, if therefore they shall say to you, behold, he is in the wilderness, go not forth. Behold, he is in the inner chamber, believe it not. 2,000 years ago, Yahshua warned of a false prophet, anti-Messiah, showing great signs and wonders. Yahshua said, don't believe it. When we see these things, don't believe it. We know that the Bible speaks of a great falling away, and that some will fall from the faith. And here Yahshua gave a warning, an admonition to us, saying, don't believe it. You know, this is where faith comes in. It's where faith is required. Well, we have the faith, the dedication, the devotion, the gumption to stay true to Yahweh's word. Or will we fall? Will we allow ourselves to be deceived? Will we crumble under the persecution? something we need to think about. Because if this would occur in our lifetime, Joshua says here in Matthew chapter 24 that no other time in human history will compare to the decadence and the deception and the immorality that we'll see at the end of this age. Remember also what Paul said. Paul said that our fight wasn't against flesh and blood, but against powers of darkness, against spiritual wickedness in high places. It's Ha-Satan, it's Lucifer, it's the great deceiver who we must guard ourselves against. As Paul says, we're not ignorant of his devices. We know his plan. And it's absolutely imperative that we stand strong. Turn with me to Revelation chapter 13 again. Chapter 13, look at verse 14. Chapter 13, verse 14, it says, "And he deceives them that dwell on the earth by reason of the signs which was given to him to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast who has the death of the sword and lived. And it was given to him to give breath to it." Notice that, giving breath to this image, "even to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as should not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free and the bond." Notice that there are no exemptions when this man of sin establishes his kingdom. All will be required. The poor, the rich, the free, the bond, all will be required to bow down to this man. "That there be given to them a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And that no man should be able to buy or sell except he that has the mark, even the name of the beast or the number of his name." Now we see two main themes here. We see an image and we see a mark. Let's talk about the image. This image here is an image that the false prophet will give life to. Maybe this image is the abomination of desolation that Daniel prophesied of in Daniel chapter 9 and 12, and Joshua prophesied of in Matthew chapter 24. Maybe it's a statue of the man of sin. What we do see here is that this image causes all mankind, again, rich, the poor, the bond, the free, to worship the beast and to receive our mark. Now, what is this mark? You know, throughout history, we've seen hundreds of different interpretations, theories, beliefs as to what this mark might be. Three of the most common today is the UPC code, the code you scan your groceries with. A tattoo, perhaps, similar to what the Jews received during the Holocaust. Or maybe a microchip. I personally believe the best possible explanation is a microchip, and here's why. It's already in use. Today, they use microchips for human and animal identification. And guess where they put it? Typically, in the wrist or the hand. This microchip, Brother Norm brought one in during one feast, and it's the size of a grain of rice, virtually undetectable once implanted. My dog, Dakota, even has a chip. It's been a common practice for years. L.A. Animal shelters, they've been doing it for 25 years, putting chips in their animals, snakes, cats, dogs, it doesn't matter. And they just use a scanner. They can receive the dog's name and the phone number and whatever else information. I believe in the future they could develop a chip that could theoretically hold all of a person's medical and financial information. And if they do develop this, and they might have this technology now, I believe that this could be and possibly will be the fulfillment of the mark of the beast. Whatever it is, a person, it says here, won't be able to engage in commerce when they receive this mark. It will prevent us from buying or selling in this system. Those who refuse to take the mark will suffer persecution and will be forced to completely remove themselves from the system, from this government, from this world, a commercial system. I believe that it is at this time that some of the saints, the woman is taken into the wilderness, and we can see this in Revelation chapter 12. We're not going to read it, but verses 13 through 17 talks about the woman being taken into the wilderness with the wings of the great eagle and being nourished for 3.5 years. Now, that word nourished means to be fed. And I also believe that the similarities between Exodus and Revelation are just amazing. As the Israelites came out, I believe we will see something close to that in the future. And when it says nourished in verse 14 of Revelation 12, I believe it's more than likely referring to hidden manna. We can see that in one of the seven assemblies. Yahshua says, if you overcome, you will receive of the hidden manna. So anyway, Yahweh will protect and nourish his people during this time. But we also know that some will be martyred. Let's look at verse 18. It says, here is wisdom. He that has understanding, let him count the number of the beast. For it is a number of man, and his number is 666. Now some say 616. Irenaeus said 616, but most scholarship concludes that 666 is preferable and more correct. Now, what is this number 666 referring to? It's not really unknown at this point, but some believe that it's the numerical value of the anti-Messiah's name. For example, there have been dozens, maybe hundreds of men and women identified with this number 666. Nero Caesar was one, and that was in Hebrew. Pope Benedict IX was another one that was identified with 666. Martin Luther, John Calvin, and Napoleon Bonaparte. They were all identified with the number 666. When you take their names and you look at it in Greek or Hebrew, the numerical value of their name equates to 666. I do believe that if this is the case, that it will be in Hebrew, because again, from all evidence, Revelation was written in Hebrew, which would necessitate that the name 666 would be in Hebrew. Let's look at the other facet, the other face of the man of sin, Revelation chapter 17. And there came one of the seven angels, verse 1, that had the seven bowls and spoke with me, saying, come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot that sets on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication. Fornication here, I believe, is sin, iniquity, abomination. And they that dwell in the earth were made drunken with the wine of her fornication. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations, even the unclean things of her fornication. And upon her forehead a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of the harlots and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Yahshua. And when I saw her, I wondered with great wonder. Here we have the religious facet of the anti-Messiah system. Notice the beast where the woman sits. Notice that this beast has the same symbolism as we saw in Revelation chapter 13 with the seven heads and 10 horns. This is symbolism, symbolic of the man of sin. And also we see that there's a woman riding on this beast. And we see here that this woman is responsible for causing the earth to commit fornication, causing the earth to sin, to commit abominable acts. And we can see this, I believe, maybe with Hollywood and some of the sins we promote in this nation. So we see here that this woman's responsible for two things, the abomination of this earth and for the murder of the saints, as we find in verse 6. Let's continue with verse 7. And the angel said to me, why did you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman. So here we have the interpretation of Revelation 13. And of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the 10 horns, The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and to go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, they whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast, how that he was and is not and shall come. Here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sets. So beginning here with verse 9, we have an explanation of the seven heads and ten horns. According to John of Patmos, these seven heads represent seven mountains on which the woman sets. Now what could these mountains represent? One explanation is that they represent the seven hills of Rome. A lot of people believe this represents Rome, but I tend to believe that they represent seven empires, seven different distinct empires that the man of sin's empire will be built upon. An example of mountain representing nation can be found in Micah chapter 4. Hold your place here and turn with me to Micah chapter 4. Verse 1. But in the latter days it shall come to pass, and this is a millennial passage speaking about the millennium, that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and peoples shall flow to it. So here we see that Yahweh's mountain shall be above every mountain. He is government. Shall be above all governments. And many nations shall go and say, come, and let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, and to the house of the Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. So here we see that mountain here represents Yahweh's empire, his kingdom, here on earth in the millennium. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 17, verse 9. As a mountain represented Yahweh's empire in Micah, I believe it's possible that these seven heads here represent the different empires, again, that the man of sin's system will be built on. A possibility of nations might represent the following: Babylon, Assyria, Egypt, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, and I believe a revived Babylonian empire. One important fact with all these nations is that they will or have all impacted Yahweh's people sometime in history. From Genesis through Revelation, Babylon. We know Babylon took Judah captive. Assyria took Israel captive. Egypt. No, they were enslaved in Egypt. Medo-Persia. They defeated the Babylonians and allowed the tribes of Benjamin and Judah, Benjamin and Judah, to go free. Greece. Rome. Rome was over the Palestinian area during the first century, during the time of Yahshua. So all these nations, at one point in history, have interacted directly with Yahweh's people. Let's look at verse 10 now. Verse 10. And there are seven kings, the five are fallen. Now listen to this. The five are fallen, the one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a little while. Now, what does this mean? Who are these kings? Many point to different emperors of Rome as fulfilling these seven kings, but again, I believe that these kings or kingdoms are connected with the seven nations that we find in verse 9. It's important to keep in mind that the word for king here can also mean kingdom. It's not exclusive to one person. It can mean an entire kingdom or nation. John writes that these seven kingdoms, he says, five were fallen, one was, and one was yet to come. So you have seven in all. Again, five were fallen, five existed, had existed, one existed, and one was yet to come. The five kingdoms or empires, I believe, that had fallen at this point were Babylon, Assyria, Egypt, Medo-Persia, and Greece. The one that was or existed during the life of John of Patmos was Rome. And the one that was not yet will be a revived, I believe, Babylonian empire. From verse 11, we see that the anti-Messiah is of the seventh empire and is the one that will go into perdition or sin, the one that Paul speaks of in his evangels and his epistles. Let's look at verse 12 now, Revelation chapter 17, verse 12. It says, and the ten horns that you saw are ten kings. So here we finally see 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they receive authority as kings with a beast for 1 hour. These have one mind, and they give their power and authority to the beast. So here we see that the 10 horns represent 10 kings. And notice that these 10 kings receive their power with, not from, with the beast. When these kings come to power, and when the anti-Messiah establishes his nation, as we saw from Daniel, we see here that these 10 kings will give the anti-Messiah, the man of sin, their power and their strength, their allegiance. Now, there's strong evidence. I'll do this quickly. I believe that there's strong evidence to indicate that these 10 kings are Arab nations, are Middle Eastern nations. A lot of people believe that they're nations in Europe. Turn with me to Psalms 83 for just a moment. I want to read this. Psalms 83. This is a prophecy from all accounts of history. It's never been fulfilled. Psalms 83. Says, O Elohim, keep not silence, hold not your peace, and be not still, O El. For lo, your enemies make a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up the head. They take crafty counsel against your people and consult together against your hidden ones. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, speaking of the nation of Israel, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. Against you they have a covenant, the tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagarines, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre. Assyria also is joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot. Now historically, this passage, this prophecy, has never taken place. From all accounts of history, we've never seen a fulfillment of this prophecy. What we see here is 10 different kings, 10 different nations who will come against Israel for the sole purpose of cutting them off from ever being a nation. What do we hear from the Arab nations today? They want to remove Israel. And what do we see in prophecy? They're going to come against Israel. They're going to come against the city of David. So I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that these 10 kings are 10 Arab nations. And again, keep in mind, I think that the focus of prophecy is the Middle East. It's not Europe. It's not even America. Now, these other parts of the world, I think, will play a part, but the focus will and always will be the Middle East. It's absolutely imperative that we understand, I think, the symbolism that we see here in Revelation 17. So I want to review for just a moment. The seven mountains here, again, represent seven empires that the anti-Messiah system will be built on. The seven kings or kingdoms represent the same seven nations in chronological order. In other words, five existed, one was, and one was yet to come. The 10 horns here represent 10 kings who will give their allegiance, who will give their strength, who will give their power to the anti-Messiah for the furtherance of his kingdom. Let's look at verse 14. Verse 14. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is the sovereign of rulers and king of kings. And they shall also overcome that are with him, called and chosen and faithful. And he says to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sets are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. Notice that where this woman sits is described as a place of peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. When I read this passage, I see diversity, diversity. A nation who's known for its diverse population. Now, what nation is more diverse than the U.S., than this nation? In this nation, we can find almost every religion, every language, every custom, every nationality we see throughout the world. This nation's been described as a melting pot. It's diverse. This is just one of the many proofs that this woman might represent this nation. And specifically, as we're going to find out, it represents a great city, perhaps New York City. We're going to see evidence, more evidence of this. Verse 16. And the 10 horns which you saw and the beast, these shall hate the harlot or the woman, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh, and shall burn her utterly with fire. That's important. For Yahweh did put in their hearts to do his mind and to come to one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of Yahweh should be accomplished. So here we see that the 10 kings who will give their power to the Antimacite will burn this woman with fire. Now, if the 10 kings do represent 10 Arab nations, and the woman here represents New York City in the U.S., I can see how this could and might be a fulfillment of prophecy. We've already seen it once, and we can see the hatred in that part of the world for the U.S. I know that we're not liked by most, but the hatred is more intense in that part of the world, the Middle East, than in any other part in the world. In the future, I could see a future attack that might dwarf 9/11 and be a fulfillment of what we see here. Again, the logic is if the 10 Arab nation, or the 10 kings are 10 Arab nations, and this woman is New York City, you can see the relationship and the hatred. Look at verse 18 now. And the woman whom you saw is that great city. So it's a great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. Besides all the proof that indicates that this woman might represent this nation in New York City, here we see that this city, it says, rules over all the kingdoms of the earth. Now, what other city in the world has more influence on this world, on other nations, than this one? And what city specifically? New York City. You know, for example, the international headquarters for the UN is located where? New York City. No other nation on the face of this earth shares the political power that New York City holds, I believe. You know, there's a lot of evidence to indicate that this woman might represent, and I'm not saying for sure, I don't know. We won't know until it happens. But there's a trend here, and there's an indication that this great city might be New York City, the financial epicenter of this world. And we're going to move on and look at the third phase here, the financial facet of Babylon. Verse 18. And if you would, keep in mind and ask yourself if this fits this nation in New York City. After these things, I saw another angel coming down out of heaven, having great authority. And the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried with a mighty voice, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, and has become a habitation of demons, and a hold of every unclean spirit, and a hold of every unclean and hateful bird." Again, a melting pot for the diversity that we see in this nation. "For by the wine of the wrath of her fornication, all the nations have fallen, and the kings of the earth committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth became rich by the power of her wantingness." Now, if any one verse illustrates that this might be speaking about this nation, this verse here is the one. It says here that the merchants of the earth became rich by her wantingness. What nation is more wanting, more selfish, desires more than we do in this nation? I can't think of a nation more wanting, more wealthy, and who impacts the world economy more than this nation here. And we're never satisfied, and that's what it says here, always wanting. Verse 4, "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come forth, my people, out of her, that you have no fellowship with her sins, and that you receive not of her plague.'" So here we have an admonition from Yahshua through John of Patmos to come out of this system when we see this system established in the future. John of Patmos says, "Come out of it, have no part of it. Don't partake in her sins," because he says, if you do, you're going to share in the plagues. And we know that that's true. In Revelation chapter 14, we know that those who take the mark will also share the punishment that the man of sin receives. "For her sins have reached even to heaven, and Yahweh has remembered her iniquities." Verse 6, "Render to her even as she rendered, and double the double according to her works. And the cup which she mingled to her double. However much she glorified herself and became wanton, so much give her a torment and mourning. For she says in her heart, 'I sit as queen, and I am no widow, and shall in no wise see mourning.' Therefore in one day shall her plagues come, death and mourning and famine, and she shall surely be utterly burned with fire, for strong is Yahweh Elohim who judged her. One day, she's going to be burned with fire and plagues and death and mourning and famine and everything that comes with it, she will be plagued with. But this will come in one day. Again, think back to 9/11. Think back how that impacted this economy, impacted this world, and that was only two towers. Think about what would happen if they set off a nuclear bomb, a dirty bomb. Technology, weaponry is out there now that could devastate New York City or another city nearby. I think we could see this occurring in prophecy, but here it says that this occurs in one day. Just like 9/11. And the kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived wantonly with her shall weep and wail over her when they look upon the smoke of her burning. I don't know how many people watched the footage for 9/11, but you could see the smoke for miles and miles and miles. What would happen if something of a greater magnitude was accomplished? Verse 10, standing far off from the fear of her torment, saying, "Woe, woe, this great city Babylon, the strong city, for in one hour her judgment came." In an instant, 1 hour. "And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore." What would happen if our economy fell in this nation, if we had a collapse in this economy? The world would suffer. The merchants of this earth would suffer. "For no man buys the merchandise anymore." Verse 12, "Merchandise of gold and silver and precious stone and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and wood and every vessel of ivory and every vessel made of most precious wood and of copper and iron and marble and cinnamon and spice and incense and ointment and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and merchandise of horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. And the fruit which your soul lusted after are gone from you. And all things that are dainty and sumptuous are perished from you. Men shall find them no more at all. The merchants of these things who were made rich by her shall stand far off for the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city. She that was arrayed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stone and pearl." That same symbolism we saw in Revelation 17 of the woman. "For in 1 hour so great riches is made desolate." 1 hour, again, an instant. A snap of a finger and it's all gone. It could happen. It did happen. And it could be worse. "And every shipmaster and every one that sells anywhere, and mariners, and as many as gain their living by the sea, stood far off." Where do we receive most of our merchandise? Overseas. Through other countries, overseas. We don't make it here in North America. It comes from China, Japan, and other parts of the world. But it comes through sea, just as we see here. "And cried out as he looked on the smoke of her burning, saying, what is like the great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, that great city in which all that had their ships in the sea were made rich by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour she is made desolate. Rejoice over her, you heavens, and you saints, and you apostles, and you prophets, for Elohim has judged your judgment on her." This passage prophesies, I believe, of the impact of the destruction of the woman that we saw in Revelation 17. As we see here, when this woman is burned with fire, it causes a chain reaction worldwide, a financial collapse. The merchants of the earth, it says here, mourn and weep. Since this woman is a financial epicenter of this world, the destruction of this woman causes a catastrophic financial collapse across this world. And I believe that this is another indicator that this woman, this great city, as we find in 1718, could be New York City, and with that, the U.S. What city in this world do people think of first when they think of the financial epicenter? I would say that for the most, New York City would be first on the mind. You know, as we continue to see more and more destruction worldwide and more prophetic signs coming to pass, we as Yahweh's people need to stay alert. We need to watch for the end of this age. Now, while we don't know the exact time of Yahshua's return, it's important that we don't overlook the possibility of this happening. The prophecies that we've read about today in 13, 17, and 18 coming to pass in the near future, in the soon coming future. You know, the last thing we want is to be negligent of not being prepared as those were during the days of Noah. We can read about that in Matthew 24, Mark 13, how they were caught off guard, and because of that they were killed in the flood. They weren't ready. For this reason, it's important that we have an understanding of prophecy, an understanding of what is to come, so that we're not caught off guard as a thief when he breaks into a house. While we don't have all the answers, while we all look through a dark glass, we're to look, we're to watch, and we're to make ourselves ready for this time. Again, if we're caught asleep to these signs, the consequences could be disastrous, could be life-threatening. And I'm not talking about this life today and now. As we've seen, there are many signs that we can look for. The anti-Messiah, a false prophet who's able to do great wonders, great signs, a mark that we must use to engage in commerce, a system of 10 kings who will give their power and strength to one man, a global financial system, and a great city burned with fire that will cause merchants throughout the world to mourn. All these signs we're to watch for and use as an indicator for Yahshua's coming. Remember that it's written that those who take the mark will share in the same punishment as received by the man of sin. It's a sobering thought, but one that we should remember and keep in mind. Even though we all look through a dark glass when it comes to Yahweh's prophetic word, we don't have all the answers. It's important that we watch so that when Yahshua does return, he may say to you and I, "Well done, good and faithful servant." May Yahweh bless you.